Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and I'm excited for another great episode. With me today, I have Rob Bonahoom. Rob, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Todd.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on the show. So Rob has been in real estate for about 22 years. He started as a realtor, and then in 1997, he opened his own mortgage brokerage. And he's been in the mortgage business ever since. Currently, he's with First American Bank, which is out of Hudson, Wisconsin. And Rob, you're stationed in Minnesota, but not too far away. And Rob is doing a lot of commercial lending. He's done residential, kind of everything. So Rob, why don't you give our listeners a little bit more about your background and who you are?
Absolutely, Todd. First of all, thanks for having me on one of your programs. It's an honor to be able to do that, and hopefully I can give the listeners something of value today. Just kind of quickly, my background, I just have always had a passion for real estate investing. Since the moment I got out of college with a degree in accounting, I wanted to get involved in that industry. And I started out really not having any money or any connections or resources or anything as a real estate agent. So in 1995, I started out selling real estate and learning about real estate, and definitely just got my feet wet. In 95, people were still doing those FHA deals where you could do a no qualify assumable, and you know, there was some interesting things out there that aren't really around much today. And the market has certainly changed a lot over the time. But I started out there in 97. I decided to open up a mortgage broker business. It was a great time with interest rates where they were kind of steadily going down for the next several years. And I was able to build up a company from my basement to a small office to, I had at my peak about 15 employees, and ran that until 2004. Kind of in 2004, if you remember, the market was good. And a lot of people ask, why would you sell your business and go work for somebody? Because I chose to do that. And part of it was me and my wife ran the business together, and we started to have kids at that time, and she got out of the business to raise the family, and I decided I wanted to focus purely on selling, and instead of trying to manage a business and sell and do everything. So I sold the company to a company called Cornerstone Mortgage out of Houston, Texas. And it was a wonderful transition. A few years later, mortgage broker companies weren't worth a dime, you know, when the market crashed in 2008. So it was a good transition, and I got to learn how to do mortgages probably a little more professionally, and what it would look like to do loans at a high level when I went to Cornerstone. And from there, I worked at Cornerstone for about 7.5 years. And in 2012, I struck a deal with First American Bank to come on staff with them. And I've been with them ever since, doing all kinds of loans, from a lot of rehab loans, for single family homes and duplexes to bigger properties. I think the largest loan I've done to date is $2.6 million on a 45,000 square foot industrial warehouse building.
All right. So, Rob, you started this business in 97. You sold it in 2004, which sounds like kind of a perfect time to sell. But take us through the beginning stages and how you built that business up to, I think you said you had 15 employees.
Yep.
So take us through kind of that and what it looked like a little bit, if you could.
Sure. You know, I think the success of that time period had a lot to do with, you know, several things. You know, as a real estate guy, you understand market timing and, you know, when it can be good and when it's not so good. And, you know, interest rates were kind of steadily going down. And I think my marketing technique really was effective for the time. What I did is I would send out 500 flyers just to a neighborhood, like paper flyers that they would put in your mailboxes. And people, you know, sure enough, I get 3 to 5 phone calls every time I send something. And I just made sure I answered my phone immediately. I would call, I would tell the customer that I could be at their house that day very quickly with a quote on how to do a loan. And I think just the fast reaction time that I had boded well in that market. I don't know that that would work so good today, but it worked good back then. And so I had kind of a system of how to do this. And then on top of that, we put an ad in the Yellow Pages, a big ad in the Yellow Pages, and we were getting all kinds of calls. You know, people don't even use that today, but it, in that time, it worked. And so we, through that engine, we had a lot of opportunity for people to work for us. And frankly, my first couple loan officers were actually realtors that saw what I was doing and saw that they could do pretty well for their families by joining the team and focusing on mortgages for a while. So that's what we did, and we grew quickly from our basement to a small office to roughly 2001 we actually bought a commercial building and ran a mortgage company out of there. And when we started to have kids, roughly just 2003, we had our first child. My wife got out of the business, and I was tasked with pretty much all the leadership. You know, like I was the best loan officer. I did the most loans. I also had to manage the team and the processing and everything. And I just was unfocused and felt, some national lender approached us and said, "Hey, we'd like to buy you guys out, have you come work for us." And we thought about it, prayed about it, and decided it was the best thing for the family to do. And it turned out it was good, because where we actually got some compensation for the company. If we would have held out for another 2 or 3 years doing it ourselves, the mortgage companies were worthless. And you know, it was 2008, you have to pay somebody to take your mortgage company just because of all the changes that happened in the industry.
Well, and then when the changes happened, you had a national support company basically leading you along the way. But I think one of the things you said, which was I think extremely valuable, you talked about the marketing that you did, the Yellow Pages, the sending, you know, basically putting out letters into people's mailboxes, and that the difference, you know, today that type of stuff might not be nearly as effective as when you did it, but when you did it, that's what worked. And I think that's important, people in business that understand it's ever changing and evolving how you're going to market, how you're going to sell. And it's not just what worked 20 years ago works today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always changing, it seems.
So when you joined Cornerstone, the market crashed not too terribly long after. And then I met you, I think it must have been 2008, Yeah, for sure. It was 2008 when I met you. And I had bought my first single family house, and I was kind of stuck. I didn't have any more money left. And I think you were the one that told me, well, refinance that thing and pull all your money back out. And I didn't really know that was possible because the sky was falling. And according to everybody, you couldn't do anything like that. So, but you were spot on. That's exactly what we did. I think you helped me get that loan refinanced. And then you were doing some really creative stuff, which I'll let you talk about. But in 2009, then you allowed me through your creative process to get several more properties. So can you talk a little bit about what you were doing there?
Yeah, sure. So that actually kind of was the introduction for the bank I'm at today. I sat down with the president of First American Bank in 2008 with kind of a problem to try to get creative on how we could help investors build their wealth at a better level in real estate, because the problem was is you got to put 20% down on every single property you buy. So people were running out of cash real quickly, you know, and limiting themselves from a great market. You know, at the time in 2008, you could buy properties in North Minneapolis for $30,000 or in that range. And they were renting at probably $1,000 to $1,100. One of the challenges, though, is those properties needed work. You know, you needed to put some work into it, substantial work a lot of times, $20,000-$30,000 sometimes, to get the property habitable. And most of the loan money out there that you could get wouldn't allow you to do that. Fannie Mae didn't want to be involved in properties that needed a lot of work, especially in 08. Everybody was scared. So I partnered with a local bank, First American, who I work for today, and I talked to the Vice President Dennis, and I'm like, Dennis, how can we help investors find a financing product that will get them the funds they need for rehab, but also protect their down payment? And what we did is we came up with this kind of a two-step program, partnering with Fannie Mae, where the bank would finance both the purchase and rehab of your property. So say you bought a property for $50,000 and you put $50,000 in rehab into it. The bank would give you a loan for $100,000, but the bank had to be protected too. So what you were required to do is to put $20,000 into a CD account at the bank to act as your down payment. That way the bank is protected. So you close on the loan for $100,000, do the renovations, buy the property, do the renovations, get the renter in, and then you come along with Fannie Mae. Now Fannie Mae's fine with it. And Fannie Mae has a rule that's never changed, and some people don't know this, that if you do a rate and term refi, Fannie Mae will use the appraised value. So what that means is a rate and term is if you're only paying off the mortgage, they'll go off the appraised value. If you try to put cash out, then they want to go off of the purchase price, and it gets real mucky. But if you use the rate and term refi, there's no seasoning. It could be 3 months after the purchase. You bought a place for 50, and now it appraises at 125. Fannie Mae will use the 125 if you're doing a rate and term refi. And so we took advantage of that caveat in that program, and partnered with a local bank. At the time I wasn't working there, it was First American, created this CD program. All of a sudden, investors were able to buy property, get it renovated, put that end loan on with Fannie Mae, and then I'd give them their CD money back, and they could do it again and again and again up to the Fannie Mae limits, which are of 10 properties.
Yeah. I think it was for a short time there, wasn't it?
It might have been. Yeah. I mean, there was a time when it just got really tight.
Really tight, yeah. Yeah, so basically, the reason for the CD was so you could max out the loan to the purchase plus the renovation. So that way, when you refied with Fannie, you could get that full 100. Otherwise, you would only be able to get, let's say, if the loan was for 80
or whatever. Yeah, and that was the issue that, for whatever reason, most local banks, even if they did the rehab loans, which many of them wouldn't at the time because of the market, but if they did, they didn't get the CD thing. And that was the whole magic to the whole thing, because we could go off the rate term at 100 if that home appraised at 125 and get you your money back.
Yeah. So you guys would go in to that property, appraise it, base your loan off of that 80% of the appraised after renovation appraisal. And then...
That was another thing is people didn't understand, but we had appraisers on staff that got future value appraisals, and they were good at it, you know, and were pretty accurate, you know, when the rubber actually met the road down the way. So a customer would provide a sworn construction statement, and the appraiser would look at the purchase agreement and the sworn, and then project what that home would be worth after those renovations were done.
I'd like to know how many companies were doing this during the time you guys were doing this throughout the U.S. I don't think there was any others in Minnesota. Maybe I'm wrong, but not in 2008 or 2009.
Doing the CD program or just financing rehabs at all?
Well, probably both, but yeah, no, doing the creative type financing you guys were doing to get people basically in with almost no money out of their pocket when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think there were very, very few. In fact, I had several people come to me and say, I went to my banker, I explained to them what you're doing, and they said, we just can't do it at our bank.
Yeah, yeah, I'd imagine. Well, cool. That I think that's pretty impressive. I love that, because you guys took a time where everybody was running the other way, and you understood the opportunity. I mean, when you're looking at properties in parts of Minneapolis, parts of St. Paul, really all over, that were going for 30% of what they sold, 20% of what they sold in some cases. I mean, I've bought properties for 15 grand at times. You saw the opportunity there, and you look at the rents, like you said, they're 1,000, they're 1,200, they're, you know, for a four bedroom, I was getting 1,300 to 1,400. It just, the numbers just made too much sense. And so,
yeah,
really,
it was one of those times when you were scared because the market had just crashed. So it was a lot of fear out there, and you either had to decide you were comfortable with it or not, but the economics for us were just too good.
Yeah. And quite frankly, I mean, the market crashed, but it was still coming down. I mean, when you guys first started in 2008, it still had, you know, at least three more years of, you know, prices falling. And, you know, you didn't quite know where it was going to go, but like you said, it just made too much sense when you looked at the economics of it. So tell us about now with First American, what kind of deals are you seeing? What kind of deals are you running through?
Well, since we're a smaller community bank, we get a variety of things. So I still do, even today in 2017, a lot of those rehab loans. And they've kind of been my bread and butter, so to speak, where I just have a steady flow of those customers that are out doing that and taking advantage of it. Along with the partnership with Fannie Mae there, a lot of investors just now are just doing the rehab side of that, and then they flip. So we see a lot of that. But I've kind of grown a little bit with my customers from way back in the day. Where several of those folks that started out flipping houses are now moving into commercial. And so that's been really fun to get to understand more about the commercial market because in residential, the market values are never really income driven. It's just based on the value of your property is based upon the overall market on comps in the neighborhood, you know, what other homes are selling for around there. In commercial, the value driver or the way you determine value in most cases, it's not all cases, is based off the income of the property. Mm-hmm. And so if you can buy a property that has some vacancy, you know, say it's 30-40% vacant, and you can, you know, fix it up and get it to a place where it's more rentable and get those spaces rented. I've seen investors do very, very well. You know, instead of making the 15 or 20,000 or 30,000 you do on a little flip, I've seen investors make $500,000 off of the right opportunity in commercial where they bought something that was not working, vacant and had some challenges, usually has some work that needed to be done, and they went in and they got the work done and rented it out and walked away or have the property today with a lot of equity.
So you're kind of seeing a lot of your customers, a lot of the same customers just now basically graduating into into commercial. That's kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of fun, and I can kind of go along for the ride.
Yeah, perfect. So what? Give us like your favorite deal that you've done, maybe your best success story that you can think of. I guess that you can publicly say as well.
Mm-hmm. Let me think. You know, there's a lot of deals that I've done that are really fun. You know, I had there was a strip center, a retail center, in Burnsville. I don't want to get into too much specifics as with things, but it was a retail strip center in Burnsville at 20,000 square feet. And I actually saw it there cause my office is in Burnsville and I saw that it just looked a little run down. There were vacancies and you drive by it every day and you're like, I want to check this out. So it took me a while, but I finally got a hold of the owner, called him up and I said, hey, would you ever consider selling the building? And he says, actually I would. And it turned out he was kind of an apartment guy. Normally this was a retail, center in Burnsville, and he was on the other side of the river with all his other properties, and he didn't owe a lot on the building, but just didn't want to put any money into it for some reason. He just, and in today's commercial world, tenants want you to put money in. It's almost kind of part of the deal. If you have a commercial site, you can kind of expect to do some work to get a tenant, and he wasn't willing to do that. He'd rather just sell it cheaper and move on. So I contacted an investor that I knew and I said, hey, I've got an opportunity here. Do you want to call this guy and see if you can work something out? And they did, and they talked, and my investor ended up buying the property for about $900,000, which is pretty cheap per square foot, less than $50 a square foot for retail in Burnsville, which is pretty cheap. And he also got the guy to carry $300,000 in a second. Yeah, so I ended up doing the loan because that was my motivation. As I said, hey, if I give you this opportunity, Mr. Investor, I'd like to get the financing. And he said, absolutely. And so I ended up doing the loan, and we got him in with only $100,000, which is like little over 10% down because there was that carry back of $300,000. We were able to make an exception and do that. And what this gentleman did that made the offer is he had an agreement with the seller that he could pre-market the property before closing. And he actually went out and got, I think there were four vacancies in the building when he first inquired and got a contract on it. And he had two or three of them full. He had leases before we ever even went to closing, which was another good thing for the bank. The bank was, you know, more excited about the loan that way. I also got him some money to improve the building. I got him about $150,000 to fix the building up, do the parking lot, redo some signage, do some tenant improvements. And so he ended up buying it, and very shortly after had the building 100% rented and did all the tenant improvements. And within about, with less than a year, he got the building appraised for $1.8 million. And so, you know, it was an eye-opener for me. This was several years ago this happened, and it was like, wow, you know. Buys it for $9 million. Now it's worth $1.8 million. He probably had $200,000 in additional costs into it. So maybe he had $1.1 million cost into it, and it's worth $1.8 million to an appraiser. And it just kind of opened my eyes to the commercial, and actually opened that customer's eyes. It was one of his first commercial buildings he did, not his very first, but close. And I just saw the opportunity in this space, and you know, it's been fun watching that customer grow.
Yeah, well, that's impressive. So did he sell it, or did he refinance it?
He refinanced it. Okay. And I don't blame him. You know, one of the things that people will do is once the valuation comes in is do a refinance. Yep. To try to recoup all of their original costs, and sometimes even then some if it appraises really well.
Yeah.
But he still owns the building today.
Yeah. Well, great. So, Rob, I'm going to change subjects a little bit. Where do you think real estate is at, commercial, residential rates? What are you seeing from a banker's view? And, you know, are you guys – getting more cautious? Are you pretty aggressive still? What are you seeing?
Yeah. You know, I think we're probably maybe a hair more cautious, especially around like apartment buildings, just because it seems like there's been some corners cut a little bit with some banks out there trying to really get all the financing, and you know, that they might be going off of really, really pushed numbers to get it to work. Mm-hmm. So we tend to be a little more cautious around apartments, and also even like the single family homes. You know, I've seen less rentals my way because of a little bit higher prices, and what they can get in rents has shifted a bit. We're still doing a lot of it. We're just careful. And so the nice thing about commercial lending is you always lend based on cash flow of the subject property. And so when we look at a transaction, we're going to want to make sure that our debt service is less than the net income, you know, that there's positive net income after debt service to be able to carry that. And then we also look at some sensitivity testing to see what would happen if the rates go up, and can this customer still handle that debt? So, you know, I think overall we're a little more cautious in this market. And I've seen it harder and harder for my investors in all spaces, from the single family to commercial to apartments, find opportunities right now. And I'm seeing more and more even try to go outside of the state to find them. They're still here, you know, but they're just not as plentiful. You know, you really have to look. But I have a client that has, I think he did 200 flips in Minneapolis last year. So, you know, there's still opportunity, but I think it's getting harder.
He did 200 flips, like full rehab flips?
Yep. Jeez. Full rehab and flip and sell right here in the Twin Cities.
No thanks. That's a lot of work.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, he's got a pretty big team. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, you have to have a massive team for that. That's impressive.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Wow. What do you think about rates? Are they going up? Are they kind of, I mean, let's say a year from now, where are they going to be?
Yeah. You know, rates have seemed to be taking a lot of us bankers by surprise at how well they've stayed low. You know, we most of us thought that rates would be, you know, a quarter point to 50 basis points higher than they are, if not more at this point. But right now the outlook is pretty steady. Our commercial rate right now, for most of our loans is going to be around 4.5 to 4.75 based upon the risk and the credit that we're looking at. And, you know, it's been that way now for quite a while. It's probably 4.25, maybe a year and a half ago. But we're not expecting and not really counting on any huge differences there. You know, we might see a little movement there, but we've been kind of all, at least at my bank, recalibrating our initial thoughts of seeing major rate increases.
Okay, sure. Okay, well, a couple more questions. One is, what's your favorite book or, you know, if you don't read a lot of books, what's your favorite, you know, web page or blog site?
Sure. My favorite book is a classic that I read when I was right in the early ages of college, believe it or not. And I still read that from time to time today. It's called Anthony Robbins, The Power to Be Your Best. Or Anthony Robbins, The Power Within.
The Power Within. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Okay. What is your definition of the secret of financial freedom?
Well, I think it's when you can, when you have enough passive income to cover your monthly debt, you know, and so that it can look differently for everybody. But if you are at a place that you don't have to go to work every day and you've got enough passive income coming in, you're financially free.
Perfect. And Rob, last question. Do you have, are you investing in real estate currently? I think you said you have a couple of investments.
Well, I've had in my career, I've had many properties. At the moment, I don't have any, but I recently formed a LLC with a couple guys, and we are in the process of looking at some commercial properties.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, I appreciate all of your time, Rob, and insight, especially into the in the mortgage industry and building your brokerage. Something I actually didn't know about from you. I've known you since 2008, but I did not know you own that brokerage. So I appreciate you sharing that with me and taking time with our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. It was my pleasure and honor.
All right. Have a great day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, that was fantastic. Rob always had fantastic words of wisdom and advice. Just a fantastic person to know and be a part of his life. And this episode is especially dear to me. Rob Bonahoom recently passed away unexpectedly. At 45 years old, left behind his wife and his four children. And You know, so sadly, Rob is no longer with us, but I was fortunate enough to be able to have him on the show and share his words of wisdom to us, and always a fantastic person to talk to and to be around. So here's to you, Rob. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for always being there for me and for all your clients when we needed you. And we're definitely missing you. And best to your family. We know you were definitely a light in their world. So I'm Todd Dexermer, and I'm signing out. Pillars of Wealth Creation, please like us on Facebook, and don't forget to subscribe to our show. Remember, every day is a Saturday, and especially after this episode, like I said, Rob passed away at 45 years old unexpectedly, so we never know when the last day is going to be our last day, and we got to make every day count, and we've got to make sure everyone we know knows that we love them and appreciate them. Be blessed. Want to learn more about real estate investing? Tune in to the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless. Joe has the longest daily running podcast on iTunes, well over 1,000 episodes. You can listen to me on Joe's podcast, episode 1,015, where Joe interviews me and asks me about my best real estate investing advice. Joe has interviewed fantastic guests such as Emmett Smith, Robert Kiyosaki, Barbara Corcoran, all kinds of fantastic guests. Make sure that you go on to Joe's podcast, subscribe, give him a 5-star rating and review. You do not want to miss out on a fantastic podcast, the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless.